podcast brought to you by the Triad Network. This podcast is designed to share trending topics occurring within the world and our communities and bring them a behavioral and mental health perspective.
Welcome to Behavioral Health Today, a Triad production. I'm your host, Dr. Graham Taylor. And today we're going to be concluding our conversation with Jerry Barone on the mental health challenges that impact our children. In our last episode, we talked about how Effective School Solutions, also referred to as ESS, has developed systems and levels of mental health support, some of the types of support a student might receive in each of the tiers, and how we can identify students and assess what their needs may be. We'll resume our conversation today talking about additional programs for other needs offered by ESS. You know, in addition to these tiers and the assessment of the kids' needs, you guys also, and I really want our listeners to know this, you guys have creatively developed programs for other needs as well, including virtual therapeutic support. This is for districts that have experienced school closures or who are remote. You guys also have a crisis assessment response and reentry solutions program. You mentioned this earlier, professional mental health development. And you've got a program for mental health visioning and planning support. You guys have been really thinking outside the box and creating these very comprehensive programs. Outstanding. How many practitioners and staff members do you have that are involved professionally with ESS? And what schools and or kind of states and school districts are you in currently?
Sure. So, you know, wow. So many good things that you brought up there. So we have about 250 full-time employees. You know, that are clinical folks. We're doing this currently in 9 states, from California to New Jersey, Connecticut, Massachusetts, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, New York. And so we're in a lot of different states providing these types of services. But getting back to your point, when school closures occurred last March, we were faced with all of our work was in person. We had to quickly kind of pivot to a virtual environment. Mm. And when you're seeing students at the tier 3 level or tier 2 level, I mean, but tier 3 mostly, these are the most high risk students.
Yes.
We've literally gone from doing zero in person, right? I mean, zero virtual sessions before March 2020 to at this point, 130,000 virtual sessions.
Right.
What we ended up doing is we took that virtual model and we were walking ourselves through it. And we just said, what would it look like at the tier 3 level? And the good news, knock on wood, about that is that we're averaging about 3 to 4 contacts a week with our highest risk students, just like a tier 3.
Yeah.
And even in the face of the pandemic, when the most at-risk students are the ones with co-occurring previous psychiatric issues, yeah, our kiddos have been safe. So that tells us that virtual mental health services do work, not as great as in person, of course, not even close. But if you use your engagement skills, and you mentioned when you add to that some of the things that we've had to do to kind of get kids to come to the sessions, right? Yes. Like giving them rewards or calling them in the morning. So we've added a whole new set of interventions in the virtual world to get kids to come. Once you get them coming, then I think you're safe. So we're in 9 states. I have 250 employees. We've done 130 virtual sessions, but we are not a virtual platform. We hope to be back doing in person with our kiddos, you know, soon. You know, we treat typically about 2,000 students, a little over 2,000 students every year.
That's really good. I want to highlight some of the stats you gave before and some of the research I was doing around that. Is this is data collected from when the school closures began back in March last year through February this year. You had 89% of students fully engaged in these virtual services. That's significant because this whole virtual thing has been an extreme challenge for kids. 3 to 4 contact sessions per week, you're saying, with per student, that is significant as well. Over 130,000 remote sessions taking place or check-ins with individuals or family or maybe in a group setting with a provider, and over 9,000 educational check-ins, you know, kind of a clinician's virtual drop-in into the kind of student's classroom during that same time period. And that is really noteworthy. You know, I also know that a program is only as good as the outcome measures, kind of is the medicine working, you know, type of thing. And I know before the pandemic, some of your stats were showing that there was a 16% increase in GPAs and absences were down by 35%. Disciplinary incidents were reduced by 38%. And the retention of your students in the district is around 99%. So I'd say your medicine's working in the things that you're doing. Really well done.
I think our strength is not necessarily, I mean, even though we have a trademark trauma-tuned model, our strength is really in mental health and management.
Yeah.
Because we have some really great people that look at the data every week and share it with our staff. So staff know if, hey, your contacts are not really up this week. We really need to get those up. And it's not us counting, you know, numbers here. It's us saying, hey, what is going on there that we can help you with? So there's a lot of kids that, you know, are struggling mightily to engage in mental health services. But in general, we've gone above and beyond. We've even sent out, you know, we have a reward system for middle school, elementary, and high school. We've even sent, like, I think Uber Eats out to a kid's house to say, hey, you scored this many, or you came to this many sessions, and here's what you get. So we're doing everything we can, but it's because we love the work we're doing. Clearly. But I also think that you cite, like, when we first started to get into this area, we were kind of feeling our way through it. And I think that quickly, though, we were able to say, hey, we can do this at the tier three level and the tier two level. Tier two, you're not seeing as kids as frequently. But at the tier three level, we had to be a success because our kids were dependent on it. And districts have loved it. I mean, they were struggling at first, wondering, like, what are you doing again? And we can't even get kids to show up for distance learning, or they were still figuring out how to do that. We were really kind of moving quick, fast to make sure our kids were safe. And I think that was really what was driving it for us, is that we wanted to ensure the safety of our kiddos, and our staff obviously are very dedicated. And our supervisory oversight is, we measure the things that are important to measure, and it's always done with support. It's not just, hey, you're supposed to be at this number versus that number. It's what's going on with those cases. And often it's, can we get that kid to a higher level of care? You know, if we haven't seen a kid, you know, showing up, I want to call their parent. I want to work with the school. Maybe they need something outside of our services.
Yeah, those are some great incentives, some really creative ways to reward children's participation and to really maximize their involvement. I know you guys even make at times morning wake-up calls to each of the students to reach out, you know, with some frequency during the week, FaceTime and other reminders, calls, texts, and, you know, even making the ways that they kind of log on and to the services as easy as can be. And, you know, I know fall 2021 is fast approaching, and there's a lot of conversation about kids returning to school full time, although some are back, you know, kind of intermittently now. But in anticipation of the mental health challenges students are going to be undoubtedly facing with the fall coming up, I know there's some of the research I've done around kind of reentry is going to be uncertainty about what school is going to look like, you know, for the students, or adjustment to new routines. They've been doing something for a year, now adjustment to new routines, maybe a new school structure or face-to-face peer interactions that they haven't had in the same way for over a year, or maybe for some students, a school avoidance and maybe even possible refusal. What are you folks doing at ESS to plan for any specific and unique reentry challenges back into the classroom for the fall 2021?
Yeah, really, really great insight on your part to kind of take us right there. You know, for us, we're truly partners with our districts, but we're also partners with anybody who's interested in you know, talking to ESS. So our thinking right from the start, since school closure, I mean, initially it was, how can we get to our current active students?
Yeah.
And then what can we put in the hands of teachers and educators to help them engage students and identify students with mental health issues? So we do something every summer going from August all the way into the end of September. We do 8 workshops for any of our partners. We do 8-hour work. We call it Tips for Teachers. Well, this year, and I'm talking about 2020, last year, I guess. So last year, 2020, everything was about, you know, the reopening of schools and what you need to know and what are the signs and symptoms. Well, the truth was that there weren't that many schools opening, right? So we had anticipated, like everybody else, that, hey, we'd be back to school in September, right, 2020. But then we found out that that wasn't going to happen. Right. Yeah. But we were still arming teachers with skills to identify kids and in distance learning environments. So as we approach 2021-22 school year, we know that there's going to be a lot more in-person stuff going on. I think what schools are scared of, and it's appropriate, is a tsunami of mental health issues. And there was an article that came out not too long ago, and it talked about focus for schools should not be on lost learning. And there's been a lot of that, and there will be some profound consequences of that. But putting that aside, the first thing that we need to do is regulate our kids with SELs, social emotional learning, right? Yes. Get them back into the classes. A lot of that tier one stuff I talked to you about before, get our teachers. You know what's interesting? We're getting a lot of requests from schools to help regulate the teaching staff. Right. So not necessarily doing counseling, but doing professional development on self-care, taking care of yourself. So a teacher is not going to be able to regulate a classroom if they're completely dysregulated and anxious. But we're doing a lot of that. And schools are also concerned with what are they going to see? And so that tier two level is really popular, where you have a counselor moving between buildings, doing direct clinical care for the kids who need it, and also providing assessment and referral for kids that are popping up that are not necessarily a crisis, but need some help. And I think if you do assessment and referral, and you do brief clinical care, and you do a lot of stuff at the tier one, professional development for parents, professional development for teachers, and SELs for kids, you'll start to, over time, my guess is in the first 3 months, you'll probably see less and less students coming up the ladder. But there's no doubt there's going to be an increase in mental health issues. Mm-hmm. And you know what's going to happen is that students who had a propensity for depression or anxiety, I think some of those students are now going to be triggered. You're going to see a lot of school avoidance. There's going to be more like ambient school avoidance. I haven't been there in a long time. I'm anxious about coming back. And then you're going to see also real school avoidance, recalcitrant, I'm not going to school kinds of.
That's right.
But that will be going on. And I think our tier two stuff, so we came out with something called flex programming. And flex programming is simply saying we have a number of different tools that we think will be helpful for you when schools open: professional development, direct clinical care at the lower level, those 6 to 8 weeks, and assessment and referral. So things that are going to build capacity and treat the kids at the lowest level. There will be a higher number of tier three kids too, but I think, you know, schools will have to, you know, kind of decide. I mean, obviously we can add tier three programming for any school, but I think that that's kind of the way we see it, is that let's get kids in, let's get them regulated in the classroom, let's get our teachers regulated, let's get our parents regulated, and then there'll be many, many kids that as a result of that will be just fine. And then there'll be about 25% above that are kind of like they need more. And that's where your tier two clinical services can really help. And above that, there'll probably be, of those 25%, there'll be another 15-20% of that 25% that are going to need more significant intervention. This is going to work. There's going to
be good. you guys are really getting out in front of that, I think, in some really good, very thoughtful ways. We'll be right back after a word from our sponsor.
Behavioral and mental health professionals provide critical support to our communities in a time when our communities need it more than ever. But they need support too, to continue their education, to connect with colleagues, and to advance their career. And so we've launched Triad, the hub for behavioral and mental health professionals. At Triad, you'll find education, community, and career resources for both current and aspiring behavioral and mental health professionals, all curated specifically for you and all for free. Visit us at hellotriad.com/BHT to register for your free professional account. Again, that's hellotriad.com/BHT. Come join the community today.
You know, Jerry, as part of our listenership, we have parents and teachers and school administrators, we have state legislators, even students listening into the program. And what can you say about ESS and how you might encourage them to think about the inclusion of ESS into their school district, into their school specifically, in a way that really might be beneficial? What would you like them to have as a takeaway?
Sure. I mean, listen, we meet with, you know, I'm on many calls with districts. I'm usually pulled in to sort of maybe elaborate on certain clinical pieces of the program, depending on what district we're talking to. But I think it's certainly worth a listening session with ESS, taking a look at what we have to offer. We are offering many things these days that are not, you know, terribly costly to districts. But the truth is, districts have received ESSER money from the federal government, and there's additional money coming your ways if it's not there already. And part of that money can be used. I know it can be used for many, many things, but it could also be used for mental health services.
Yeah.
And I think sitting on that money, a district might say, hey, I've always wanted to do something like this, and now I have the funding to do it. And I think what we try to help districts understand is you don't have to do this yourself. You know, when I need dental work, I don't say, you know, gee, I'd like to do this myself. I mean, there is a specialty in the area that we're talking about here. When I talk about best practices, it's not just some word I'm throwing out there. There's a set of standards. There is supervisory oversight. There are clinical experts. We don't bring any, you know, kids out of school, out of graduate school. We only hire staff that are 3 years or longer.
Got it.
For our programs. But I would say for any district out there, it's certainly worth pulling up with ESS, listening to what we have to offer, taking a look at how we might be able to help you, and then going from there, whether it's at, you know, tier one, tier two, or tier three, or all. I mean, certainly I've been in many, many conversations recently where we're talking about helping schools add something at all three levels and how we'll work with their school district. We're not there to undermine or supplant existing services in any way, shape, or form. We're there to make them stronger. And we know exactly, you know, from the very beginning, we had to come in and land in a school, work with all sorts of administrators, superintendents, leadership, and walk away with high satisfaction from parents who are given a double thumbs up and saying, thank you for bringing in these kinds of services. And I think when ESS is in place, it only makes the services you already have that much better, because you don't have staff reaching beyond what they can do. They can take care of their kids while ESS takes care of the highest risk students and where you need the specialty.
What a nice complimentary, you know, kind of teamwork approach here. You know, as we're talking about, we're kind of winding down for today, but sure, I would love you to give our listeners some resources that you'd like to have them access for effective school solutions and anything else you might recommend. Leave us with some resources, would you please?
Sure. Yeah. So, you know, go to our website, you know, ESS Effective School Solutions. You certainly can get on there. There's tons of stuff in the thought leadership section. There's all of these articles. We have something that we put out every month called Mind Beats, and there are a bunch of solutions out there. We call them solution briefs articles. I've authored probably about 3 to 5 since the pandemic hit, and just a number of ones that I think are extremely valuable. So that's a great source, right? Just go to thought leadership. In addition, I mean, since we're talking mental health,
I'll give
you a mnemonic that was given to me by a psychiatrist years ago called SIG-E-CAPS, and it stood for signature energy pills. And what that means for a psychiatrist is I got to remind to sign off on my prescription, right? But S stands for sleep disturbance, right? So let's go down to symptoms of depression or any serious mental health issue. Is there a disturbance in sleep? Is there a disturbance in interest? SI. Is there increasing guilt or hopelessness? Is there problems with anxiety? That's your A, right? Appetite disturbance as well. The last couple pieces are suicidality and lethargy, right? So those are the kinds of things that, you know, that those are what we would call neurovegetative signs that someone might have. If you or if any of your students or your children are struggling with something like that, it might be time to take a look at, you know, getting some help.
Really good. Jerry, you've been very creative in what you guys have put together. Well done. And you're doing right things. It's been so nice to have you on the show today. Thank you so much for joining us.
It's been my pleasure to talk to you, Graham. Thanks so much.
Really, really appreciate it. And I want to thank our listeners for joining us today as well. Triad is so pleased to have guests like Jerry on our show, and we're pleased that you've joined to listen in. We'll look forward to seeing you next time on Behavioral Health Today.
We appreciate all the support from our community, and if you like our show, one of the best ways you can support it is by giving us a 5-star rating and leaving a review. Behavioral Health Today is a podcast part of the Triad Network, all rights reserved.